What is up, Hockey IQ listeners? I'm here to chat about our newest sponsor, Sensarena. Your brain is one of the most important parts of your body. Why not invest in a tool that allows you to train it? With Sensarena, athletes can gain a competitive edge using VR training. Players are able to go through a scenario thousands of times without having to step foot on the ice. No more waiting around for puck touches or perfect scenarios. Sensarena can enhance reaction time, decision-making, and multitasking abilities, making you the next MVP. I mean, if the LA Kings are using it, it's got to be good. With our promo code HockeyIQ, you receive $50 off an annual plan purchase. Head on over to sensarena.com to check it all out.
On today's podcast, we have Dwayne Blay. Dwayne has, he's done a lot, and he's been kind of everywhere. I think he's at a great crossroads of just development through the ages. He gets kids of all ages, all the way up to the NHL, and very cool of what he owns. He's TPH Hockey, NSDA, works with the Capitals, London Knights as well. So he's kind of been everywhere. Dan, what'd you take away from this conversation? I mean, it was all over the place, but oh my gosh. Words per knowledge, just off the charts.
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it. Yeah, it was a super fun conversation. I learned a lot. I'd never talked to him before, so it's always kind of nice to get to know somebody for the first time on the pod. I really thought it was super interesting that he works with these small groups with the Capitals, and he told some cool Ovechkin stories, but also like just the way that he works with kids of all ages, players of all ages, like his own TPH company. He's just doing a lot, and he's a great resource. I know I use behind the scenes for my own coaching, so it's always nice to have someone that you can kind of steal a little bit of material from.
Oh, yeah. He's great. I do love kind of where we ended the conversation with where the game's going. And I put out a hot tweet the other day, too, about how skating's a little bit overrated. So the part that he went from being a guy who was all about getting the proper technique and all that, now it's just, okay, is his footwork clean enough to get him A to B? That's great. And the rest, it's all about the head, making sure that our heads up hockey and being able to see the play, scan, all that kind of stuff. I thought that was wonderful. And that's what'd you think about his story as a parent?
I was definitely laughing. That was hilarious. And it hits close to home, you know, just like seeing parents, I'm sure I was on a regular basis, just like you do. And it was pretty funny.
That was wonderful. Well, without further ado, let's get into the conversation. This is a real good one. Here we go, Dwayne Blay. All right, Dwayne, welcome to the podcast. Super excited to have you on. A little bit of a hero of mine. I think you produce some great content, so super excited for this episode.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, so we got Dan here in Columbus. I'm in Cleveland, and where are you out of?
I'm in London, Ontario. So up for any of the U.S. listeners, I guess it'd be probably an hour and a half, 2 hours from Buffalo, just about an hour and a half from Toronto on the west side, and then probably an hour and a half, 2 hours from Detroit. So kind of southwestern Ontario.
It's a great area to be. I mean, the London Knights have done so well for so long, and it seems like constantly producing great players out of there. I mean, how do you – or maybe give the listeners a better background or a quick background of kind of your story, how you got involved with the London Knights, started your own company, all of this. I mean, you're heavily involved and doing great stuff.
Yeah, thanks. I'm from Sudbury, Ontario, so kind of a northern town, probably 3-4 hours from Toronto, so just straight north of Toronto. So I grew up basically playing on outdoor rinks, and I didn't start until I was 9, so I was kind of late to the game when you think of it in the standards of today's parents that go crazy because their kids aren't playing hockey at 3 years old or have skates on it too. But I never wanted to play, and then we moved into a neighborhood where kids were playing, so we played ball hockey a little bit, and I'm like, my brother and I, we want to play. So started playing, didn't know how to skate. And I'm from a family. My dad played a bit of hockey. My mom was a power skating instructor in the city and a figure skater, but we couldn't skate a lick just because we were those kids. We're like, mom, I got it. No problem. I know how to skate. So they signed us up for hockey. We started and we were terrible. So she put us in a skating program with other instructors, not her, and learned how to skate and then fell in love with it. And we're very fortunate because there was outdoor rinks in every neighborhood, literally up in Sudbury back in the day. Every single neighborhood had an outdoor rink. So if you went and stopped at a buddy's house, you bring your skates, you go play in the outdoor rink. And that's where I spent, you know, all my time. So I fell in love with hockey, obviously, and kind of tried to, I guess, catch up to the kids that were my age at that point. And yeah, I fell in love with it. So I played all my minor hockey in Sudbury, and then I moved to Markham, Ontario, played junior for the Waxers there, and then was fortunate enough to get a scholarship down to Alabama Huntsville and played there for 4 years, which was great. I got exposed to the South a little bit, which was really cool. And then from there, I got an opportunity to play some pro. So I played in the East Coast, or the West Coast League, which became the East Coast League. And then I played in the East Coast Hockey League for a couple of years. And then a buddy of mine's from London, Ontario. We ended up buying a hockey school up here. So I moved up here and started running that for the summer. And then I ended up buying a house. And it was the year of the lockout, 05. So I was going to go and play. I was going to try to go to Europe. And all the good players flooded to Europe. So I was going to get stuck kind of playing maybe in a lower league. I didn't really want to do that. So I was going to go back to the East Coast League. Long story short, I ended up saying, oh, you know what, I'll stay here and kind of push our business a little bit. And then that's been probably 16 years. So from then till now, I guess we've got, we run Total Package Hockey up here and some full day camps and also some small groups and privates and different things like that. And then probably right after the Knights won the Memorial Cup in 05, 06, I think it was, I started doing skill development with them. I went out for kind of a trial. They were looking for a skills coach, and I've been with them ever since. So I go kind of do work with I kind of work with all the young guys at the start of the year. And then a lot of the older guys I'll go out with kind of in the mornings when they don't have school, and we'll work on individual stuff with them and kind of, touch on basically what skills they'd like to work on and different things that they need to work on in order to get to that next level of their game.
That's awesome. So you've pretty much had all the age groups. That's exciting stuff. And then you've gone even all the way up to the NHL. I know you're working with the Capitals for a while. Yeah. How was that?
It was awesome. Yeah, it was great. I was with them for 5 years. And then through COVID and stuff, we'll kind of see what happens on the other side as far as I think what happens with the NHL period. It was unbelievable. I mean, it was great. I worked a lot with the prospects. So I'd travel around to, out west to the WHL and work with some of the prospects that we had drafted out in those leagues. And then I'd work with the Hershey Bears a lot. I'd go down to Hershey quite a bit, probably once a month, to work with the prospects in Hershey. And then last year, I was up with Washington quite a bit. Last 2 years, I was working with the big club, basically, probably once a month, which was awesome. It was really, really cool. And it's weird because a lot of people, think when guys get to the NHL, they're polished, they're ready. They just go and they play. And those guys still crave and starve skills, skill development, I should say. And even in talking to a lot of them over the years, a lot of them, they joke that their skills get worse during the season because there's, practices. If you ever seen an NHL practice, it's good. It's tape to tape, but it's a lot of situate game stuff. So it's a breakout to a 3-on-2. It's power play. It's D zone coverage. It's neutral zone regroups, but it's not a lot of little in tight plays or plays through skates or little saucer passes. They'll do that after practice or before practice. So, having skill coaches that do go in with NHL clubs is more and more the norm now. And for that reason, so players can work on, hey, I'm not hitting my one-timer well. I need to really work on that cross-ice pass, and hitting that one-timer in stride or whatever it is, right? So I think it's more and more teams now are adopting that and getting a development team that does work with the NHL club as well as the prospects. But my experience was awesome. It was great.
That's really cool. I'm curious what the relationship is like with the NHL staff as like a skills consultant, as a development coach, because obviously your goal is to work in tandem with the players, but it's not like system. So like, are they threatened? Like, tell me about what that relationship's been like.
Yeah. And I think the one thing, I can only speak for myself personally. And I over the years, obviously get to know a lot of skills coaches, and there are, some skill coaches out there that think they have the secret sauce. So they're very, I've got the secret way of scoring more, and realistically there's no secret sauce, right? It's hockey. I mean, any skill coach is going to teach a lot of the same stuff, which is good. But anytime I went into a team, whether it was the AHL or the OHL or the NHL, my biggest thing is stay in my lane. I love what I do. I'm not looking to steal an assistant coach's job. I'm not trying to become an assistant coach. I like doing skills. So number one thing is establishing that relationship with the assistant coaches where they don't feel threatened by you and you're not trying to get a better relationship with a player and that player's listening to you now. It's all working cohesively together. So every time I go in, I would talk to the assistant coach that works with the forwards and say, hey, what are you seeing with this guy? What are you seeing with this guy? What are some areas of this guy? And the defense coach, same thing. And then I would hit on those areas. A lot of times they would come out with me and I'd say, this is kind of the plan I was thinking about. What do you think? And then and we'd kind of work it out together a little bit. But I think that's the biggest thing is, they see the players, they watch more video than any of us are ever going to watch on some of these players. So they have a good handle on what they're doing. The problem with coaches at that level is that they're so busy worried about winning, worried about their D playing well or their forwards playing well, worried about their systems, that they don't have time to help a player, you know, pick up a rim properly or, you know, blowing up pucks on their backhand, which, you know, happens at the AHL level and at the NHL level. So that's where, you know, a skills coach can come in, and you can spend 15, 20 minutes after practice just hammering on those little kind of mundane, you know, annoying little skills that that sometimes you can't cover in practice.
For sure. What was it like teaching Alex Ovechkin how to shoot a one-timer?
I don't think, if you look at it, like any pure skill coach out there that's teaching a perfect one-timer, let's say, which there's no such thing, but let's just say you're trying to get the technique hammered down. I mean, Alex Ovechkin probably doesn't have the best technique on a one-timer, but he hammers a puck and it works for him. And that was a joke that a lot of people would ask me, like, oh, you know, so you help him with his one-timer? Like, not a chance. Guy scores 50 goals a year. Like, do whatever you're doing, keep doing what you're doing. But, you know, to point on a guy like Alex Ovechkin, awesome guy. Like, you know, we did some stuff after practice and just little things. Like, you know, when you look at what we did, in Washington was we would bucket players together in groups of threes or fours. But basically, you know, your power fours would go together or your real skilled players would go together. And then I would develop a bit of a plan for that. So for a guy like Alex getting the shot off, coming off the wing or dragging and pulling a shot, and we would add that stuff to it. And for guys like him and one-timers, obviously, we, you know, add that into some of the sessions, obviously, but it's just getting reps, you know, in practice. He's not going to get 7, 8, 9 shots one specific way, you know, he's maybe going to be able to pull it off once or twice in a drill, but so just getting those reps in, I think was huge, not just for him, but for everybody. And he was awesome to work with. He was great. He'd get mad when he missed a shot, or he'd get mad if he, you know, muffed the pass, but it was really good. It was fun.
I love that. I'm just finding your little niche and finding out how you can help a specific group. That's truly, truly something I feel like people don't understand. They get in one way and this is how you do it, when it needs to be customized for the players. So I'm kind of curious on how you like to go about creating those plans for those groups and making sure it's specific to the needs of the players.
Yeah, I know, it's a good question. I think, you know, for me, I could sit here in London, Ontario, and develop the best plan ever for a player in Washington. And then I get there and one of the coaches says, man, he cannot, you know, shoot a one-timer. He cannot, you know, shoot the puck through traffic. He's always getting shots blocked or tipped up in the air. So that there, my whole plan goes in the garbage, right? So I got to talk with them and see what they like. And then the other thing too is talking to the players and asking the players, especially at that level, you know, asking them, hey, what are some things that you need to work on? What are some things that you would like to focus on? So I'll do that. Let's say I come in on a Monday, you know, before practice, I'd be walking around, you know, trying to see some of the guys. And if I knew I had these 6 players after practice, then I would go try to talk to them and say, hey, I'm going to be out with you. You know, is there anything that you want to focus on? And sometimes guys are like, no, man, anything you have is great. You know, just, yeah, let's do some touches and that'd be awesome. Okay. And then you have other players that'll be like, yeah, you know what? I'd love to pick up pucks on the rim, you know, getting them to the net. Yeah, perfect. Or I'd like to work on net front stuff, just tips, like getting some pucks on net, redirecting pucks. Perfect. So I'll add that into the plan. But I'll always have an idea of what I want to work on with guys, depending on what type of player they are. So if you have a heavy player who's good along the wall, then I'll probably, you know, focus on some things that are going to be maybe some down low plays or some wall plays. Or if there's a real mobile defenseman on the blue line, maybe we'll work on some footwork and hip movement along the blue line to get pucks to the net and things like that.
I'm curious. So obviously you kind of hit on it. You work with guys in the NHL, junior, and with TPH, all ages and skills. Like what are your experiences like, you know, preferences? I'm sure there's pros and cons of working with NHL guys versus OHL guys. Like just maybe talk about your experiences with that.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at minor hockey, I think, you know, and it's funny because a lot of the stuff that we do, you know, that anybody does with young kids, you do the same stuff with the older players. You may add some layers to it or some little bit more pressure to it or different things to it. But, you know, some of those same techniques we're trying to implement in the young players to get to that, you know, hopefully get to that next level at one point. But there, you know, people say that the you know, the OHL is, you know, just below kind of, obviously they're younger, but, you know, a lot of those guys will jump in and play in the NHL and then the AHL to the NHL. Some will go directly from the OHL to the NHL, but there's a huge, huge gap there. And there's a massive skill gap there as far as just even speed, strength, obviously, and then just how players think the game. And I think, you know, as a skills coach, you know, you're trying to bridge that gap a little bit. So when you get a player in the OHL, when I'm working with young players in the OHL, I'm trying to get them to be able to perform things that they might see in pro at the OHL level. And, you know, if I'm working with kids in the minor hockey system, let's say in Bantam or Midget, so like U14s, U15s, U16s, you know, one of the lines I use, which, you know, I say minor hockey is a joke, and this is no offense to anybody playing minor hockey or coaching minor hockey, but you don't want to play minor hockey your whole life. You want to play, you want to get to that next level. So whether it's junior or college or whatever you want to, wherever you want to go, let's get you ready for that. So let's get you better at picking up passes, because those are things that get exploited at the next level. Let's get you better at, you know, controlling a puck. Let's get you better at scanning the ice and knowing your surroundings, creating time and space, whatever that might be, right? So really trying to get kids ready for that next jump, you know, that next level. And then even the OHL, like I joke with the guys all the time, like, what's your goal coming to the OHL or the WHL or the Q? It's not to play in the Q for 5 years, right? It's to try to go to the NHL, try to get drafted. So let's, you know, let's help you get ready for that draft. And sometimes, you know, I've been fortunate over the years to work with a lot of really good players, and they have real successful careers in the OHL. But it's hard to let them know that, hey, like, it doesn't matter. You scored 30 goals in the OHL. That's amazing, but that's not going to translate directly to the NHL or to the AHL. You know, the way you play and the style you play, you're not going to be a 30, 40 goal scorer right off the bat. You might, but, you know, you need to learn how to do this, you know, A, B, and C before to be able to be successful at that level, right? So, and some players are very, very good in major junior, and they feel like, oh, I just got to wait and punch my ticket to the NHL. But, man, that gap is huge.
I think that's something that's well said, is you're not training them for today, but for tomorrow and where they want to be. And maybe what are some of those gaps? I mean, because it seems like from the AHL, the NHL, there's not that huge gap. You go to the skills competition, and it's pretty much the exact same stats measured there. So is there added elements that you're seeing, or their habits, work ethic?
You know what? One of the biggest things I feel, and you're right, like the top end players in the AHL, obviously, can jump in and out of the lineup in the NHL. There's no doubt about it, right? But I think one of the biggest things that I've noticed over the years being at that level is there's something missing that's keeping you in the AHL. And you maybe play games in the NHL, but you're coming back down and there's something missing. It could be attitude. It could be work ethic. It could be, are you a pro? And, you know, when we talk about are you a pro, it's just, you know, do you come to the rink early? Are you ready? Do you want to work on stuff? Are you spending extra time on your craft? Different things like that. You know, as far as looking at skills that are different from, let's say, the NHL to the AHL level, I think the speed of the game is pretty similar. I think at the NHL level, you're going to have more guys that are going to be able to think the game a little bit quicker. And even your third and fourth liners, they still think the game quickly. They play at that pace. And, you know, they've had opportunity to do it. So they're used to it, basically. And you see guys in the AHL that maybe get a game here, a game there, and they look a little bit out of place, especially if you got a buddy that maybe got called up and you're like, oh, he's super excited. You watch him in his first game, you're like, it wasn't bad, you know, but you kind of miss that guy, or he's got McKinnon coming down on him, like, oh God, here, you know, and so you kind of see, but man, that same player gets 15, 20 games and knows he's not going to get sent down. You're going to get 15 games. You're going to play 10, 15 minutes. That's a totally different player after those 15 games. Now they're played at that speed. They're a little bit more comfortable, but it's really hard because a lot of players don't get that opportunity right off the bat. They're going to play one or two games, 7, 8 minutes. You know, it's hard to be effective at that time and, you know, and then making that jump. So I think players need to get their feet wet and get in there. But I think the biggest thing is the mind, is just how players think the game. And, you know, if you look at skills, the biggest skills for me that separate those really, real elite players from those really, really good players is their head, their eyes, and how they see the ice and how they, you know, how they create time and space. You know, you look at a player like a Backstrom or McDavid or McKinnon, how they look stuff off and cut. And that's another skill in itself, just scanning the ice, you know, shoulder checking, viewing the ice, whatever you want to call it. But that's something that I think is huge. And that is a massive separation with forwards and D at that elite level compared to the kind of below.
Wow, that's so true. And I think that's kind of the big shtick we have here. It's all about hockey IQ and training that. And that's the true difference. And Mitch Korn talks about it too. He's like, at the NHL, pretty much goalie one to goalie 60 or 64 soon. They're pretty much all the same talent, but it's a matter of the mental side of it. And that's the big difference between, you know, Carey Price making 10 mil a year versus a guy just barely in the league. I mean, is there ways that you go about filling those gaps, getting them up to a higher hockey IQ, a higher level of processing speed?
Yeah, I think, you know, when we talk about hockey IQ, kind of a perfectly labeled podcast here, because it's one of those things like, can you teach it? And that's always the question, right? Can you teach hockey IQ? The kid either is smart, gets the game, has hockey sense, or he doesn't. I think you can teach hockey IQ to a certain level. I think you're gonna have players that just get the game and they just see it. Whether you put them on a soccer pitch or you put them on a basketball court, they're gonna be able to figure out where to go, how to make plays, right? But I think other players can develop it. And I think some of the best ways to develop it is watching hockey, right? And just watching games, but not just watching goals, and especially for young kids, not just watching goals, but sitting with somebody that knows the game a little bit. And when that goal scored, you know, hey, did you see three plays back when that defenseman took the hit, chipped it behind the net, his D-man faked his pass, moved it out? That's how that whole goal started, right? And just like looking at the whole game. And sometimes, you know, you guys watch hockey, you play at high level. When you see a player do something on the ice, in your mind right away, you're like, oh, that puck should get kicked back out here, right? And usually, not all the time, but most of the time, that play kind of happens or something around that happens. Where when you see kids with no hockey IQ, they don't see that. So teaching them how to see these plays develop and then incorporating that into your practices or your skill development sessions or whatever you're doing in order for them to get that pattern down a little bit. And then I think the biggest thing is adding, you know, some chaos or some unforeseen circumstances. So some added pressure or a coach jumping in, or so now they got to read and react. Now they got to make, you know, plays on the fly. Cause I think that's the one thing that we see now more than ever is every player's got a skill coach or four, you know, every player does skill sessions or 10. So they're all used to going around. They can all stick handle over sticks. They can all flip pucks. They can do stuff that, you know, I could never do at 15, 16, and they can do it at 7 and 8 now. You know, you look at, you know, when you look at these videos that you see online of these kids, it's like, wow, they're super, super skilled, you know, but can they do that in a game? Can they do it under pressure? Can they do it in unknown areas and in that chaotic, you know, gameplay? And I think that's the biggest thing is translating into that gameplay.
Kind of said that better. And I think actually one of the greatest things for my college team, it's a club college team, is we throw them in the men's league. So they actually get to see against real men age 50. Like, they've seen the patterns. They know everything. It's like, you guys can skate them off the rink all you want, but they're still winning 3-2 at the end of the night because they know what you're going to do before you know what you're going to do.
Yeah.
So that's a great spot of putting it in there. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, I couldn't have said that better. And you're really speaking our language there. One question I did have, though, as a follow-up, it, you know, I totally agree about watching games. I think that's something that our kids probably don't do enough of. I coach at the Bantam age, and I know that's something that I harp on a lot. What about, like, with your individual clients? Do you add video, or, like, what's your philosophy on, like, them watching themselves?
Yeah, I think it's important because I think a lot – and I'm sure you guys went through it, too, when you played – where maybe you're doing video with the coach on the screen, or maybe sending your clips and you're like, man, I played really good last night. Like, I was wheeling, I was skating. You watch the video like, what? Like, I was terrible, man. I was gliding everywhere. Like, I missed that check. Like, so I think a lot of times in our mind, how we think we play the game is a lot different than what it, in reality it looks like. So I think it is really important. I encourage our players when they leave to go play, ask the coach for clips, like ask the coach for your clips if you're not getting them already. And dissect them and be honest with yourself. You know, yeah, I could have played this better. I could have done that better. And that's how you're going to learn. And that's how you're going to get better. So I think it's really important to not only watch games and hockey games, but also watch your own clips and see how you're producing and how you're playing and how you're performing in games, I think is massive for sure.
And then how do you approach that with your clients and your coaching? Because you obviously don't want to overcoach someone, but you want to have that preparation and give them key insights. So it's kind of that fine line. How do you like to approach it?
Yeah, it's tough because a lot of players are inundated with video now, right? Especially at the higher levels. I mean, they're doing 2 to 3 team video sessions a week. They're getting all their clips sent to them. They're probably sitting down and doing extra video sessions with the forward coach or the D coach. They're watching power play clips. They're watching penalty killing clips. So they're getting inundated with video. So for a skills coach to go in and say, oh, by the way, I got another couple hours of video I want you to watch of the skill session you just did, you know, that's a tough one, right? What I've done in the past, just for my experiences, I will video them during a video session. Usually our video sessions are all videoed. I won't send them that, but I'll send them a couple little clips that I saw that, you know, and sometimes as easy as just using an app like Huddle. I use Huddle, but or Coach's Eye, anything, doesn't matter. And just taking a video of them up close, taking a shot, because sometimes when you have the overhead of the rink, you can't see like the little hand up, or you can't see where their hands are on their stick or how their feet are moving. So I'll just take an iPad or my iPhone or whatever it is and just video them on the ice. And then I'll edit it later and voice over it and say, hey, listen, Johnny, when you were going down here, see how your hands kind of were really tight together. And then when you got the pass, you separated them and then shot. Well, you're wasting time by separating them. Just get them set right away, catch the pass and shoot it. And you'll get that shot off quicker. And try to send them like a 1-minute video, just explaining everything that we kind of talked about on the ice. but also just kind of reiterating what we were chatting about, those key points, so that they can, you know, kind of view them and dissect them. And I've done this at the AHL level and a little bit at the NHL level. And when I get to the rink the next day, if I've sent it out that night, I'll have guys call up to me like, "Hey Blazer, I saw that clip, man. Thanks. That was good. I never even knew I did that. It's great." And then I've seen players like fix stuff so quickly because they see it. Because if you tell a player, "Hey, your hands are sliding when you're coming in the zone," meaning like you're coming in like this, and then when you get your pass, you're getting it, and then you're sliding your hand down and you're trying to make a play. They don't see that. It's happening so fast. So if you can video it a little bit, or they're knuckling their shot because they're opening the blade off that, you know, as they're releasing. Well, then if you can show that to them in a video, oh man, and there's no way they could pick it up if they don't know. It's just too fast. Everything's happened so quick. So if you can slow it down and show it to them, a lot of times that's a really, you know, helpful way to get them to learn a little bit quicker for sure.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think video is just a great tool. I want to go back to something you said a little while ago. We were talking about like playing in small pods. I think you said three people when you were with the Caps at these practices. I'm curious, just from like a philosophical standpoint, and it doesn't have to be the Capitals, it can be, you know, a small client group. What's your philosophy on, you know, are you trying to teach to the best, you know, the highest common denominator? Like, are you making the strides hardest for the top kid versus like, you know, making it accessible for the, maybe the worst of the three, or somewhere in the middle, you know what I mean? Like it's a fine line. It's something that I struggle with, maybe not struggle with, but it's something that I'm conscious about when I'm working with three, with small groups, is like, I don't want, you know, the best kid to get like bored, but I also want the him to like, you know, strive for the next level, but I don't want to leave this kid behind.
Yeah, that's actually a great question. I think when we'll talk about minor hockey, because at the NHL level, or let's say NHL pro, even junior, not so much, but let's say NHL pro, they're all going to be pretty close. And those little pieces of skill that you're going to be touching on, they're all going to benefit from that a little bit, right? If I had a group of three, I think that's super manageable for a skill coach to be able to pick things out of each player. And, you know, maybe you have three or four different drills or different little segments you're going to run through, and it's going to help all three of them. But maybe this one's more designed for player A, this one's more designed for player B, and this one's more designed for player C, but everyone's going to benefit from it. But I know his big weaknesses here. But when you get to like minor hockey, so let's say, you know, U16s, U14s, U12s, stuff like that, that skill gap is a lot bigger. You know, you've got maybe three kids, one's real good, one's in the middle, one's a little bit weaker. One thing I tend to do and is I'll try to hit on each some of their weaknesses. Now, well, let's say it's shooting. Maybe player A was a little bit more elite. He can fire the puck great. So I'll make the passes rather than have the players make the passes. So for him, I'll fire him a little bit harder passes. And, you know, so he's got to pick him up. For player C, who's, you know, just working hard and just trying to get better, maybe I'll give him a little bit lighter passes, or I'll give him a little bit of a different road to go that maybe is more suitable for him. So I'll tweak drills a little bit, especially in small groups, because it's, you have so much freedom in a small group. Whereas if you have 8, 9, 10 and more kids on the ice, it's a little bit more difficult to tweak things as you go for one player. You know what I mean? So if you have three players, you can make it way different. And even, you know, sometimes you'll get on the ice and you have two forwards and a defenseman. Well, what do you do there? Right. So you can go through warm up. You can do a lot of different things together. And then maybe you have the drill. So half of it, you know, the first part's for the forwards. They go down, get a shot, pick up a rim down low, and then they got to give it to the D, and the D walks the line, gets a shot. So you can still kind of critique the defenseman and talk to the defenseman about picking up a rim off the wall, walk the blue line. And then you can also talk to the forwards down low about picking up a rim down low. So you kind of, you know, try to be as creative as you can, I guess, but in order to hit those key areas for each of the players.
That's excellent. And I love that you're personalizing it for each. Is there any specific like things that you feel that you're really great at teaching or are just that much more valuable for players' development other than other skills? Or do you focus on, say, like big, you think these are the big rocks, you need to make sure we're hitting these consistently, and here's how you kind of hit them? What is that?
It's a good question. I think like, you know, skill development for me has changed so much, because I think when we were younger, when I was younger, it was power skating. Like, I never heard of a skills coach really. It was all power skating, and you'd have potentially figure skaters coming out and teaching your team or working with your team, or maybe you had a power skating coach that came out. And I mean, I tell coaches all the time, if I'm coming out to work with your team, do not say the power skating coach is here, because if I went into a group of men's league players to NHL players to 8-year-olds and said, "Hey guys, power skating coach is here," what's like, roll eyes. Oh my, I don't want to, you know. So I always say, tell them the skills coach is here, because I think, you know, skating is the biggest skill. You need to be good at skating. There's no doubt about it. That's the most important skill. But at the end of the day, you know, hockey's played with a puck. It's played with passes. It's played with pressure. So any skill sessions I run, if the coach really wants me to focus on skating, no problem. We'll spend 15, 20 minutes on skating, and then we'll add pucks and we'll add skills or like other skills, you know, passing, shooting, whatever that is. But to answer your question, so I came out of that power skating kind of lineage or whatever you want to call it. So I grew up, you know, teaching power skating. I grew up with, you know, running programs with no pucks, just all skating and all hockey equipment and sticks and all that kind of stuff. But over the years, I've definitely morphed and migrated more and more and more into probably shooting and then puck handling a little bit and then passing. And then now it's more, I feel, all encompassing, because what we're trying to teach a lot of the players now is what's practical to the game, right? So even skating, like I don't spend as much time breaking down stride as I used to do. Like we used to spend, you know, 15, 20 minutes a session just breaking down stride, breaking down crossovers, breaking down how to hold your edge properly, all that kind of stuff. We still do that, but we do it now in a way different way, meaning we'll do it in a drill. Maybe at the start of the drill, they do that, and then they'll pick up a puck after and do the same sequence with the puck, right? I'll have NHL players sometimes that come back and they'll say, hey, listen, I gotta tear my stride apart. It doesn't feel right, doesn't feel good. So we will spend like, you know, 2-3 hours on the ice with zero pucks, just working on skating. I have no problem doing that. I love doing it, but for the most part, it's always going to have pucks and it's always going to have, you know, always going to have some component of pucks or pressure or shooting or something like that. But I love the skating aspect of the game. That's the only reason why I played a high level. So I'm probably more, you know, I'm more biased towards the skating. If I see a bad skater, it's like nails on a chalkboard to me. And I see areas right away that we can probably fix or help, you know, to make more efficient. And I don't feel like there's any kind of perfect stride. I think everyone skates differently. Everyone's got their own stride. So if I go work with a team or a player, I'm like, I'm not trying to make you a better skater. I'm just trying to make you more efficient. And I'll give you some ideas on how to become more efficient, but I'm not trying to change your stride or trying to change what you do. I'll just try to make you a little more efficient. And hopefully we can change a little bit, but a lot of players get really kind of worried and scared that, oh man, he's going to try to change everything. It's going to be awkward. It's going to be weird. Like, no, we'll start just baby steps and then kind of continue to build from there.
That's awesome. And for our listeners who are, you know, maybe unfamiliar with this, the NSDA, National Skill Development Association, his YouTube page is a great resource to work with kids, work with really all players, all skill levels on skating, particularly. I know I use that as a resource. So thanks for that.
Thanks for the plug. Thanks for the plug.
For sure. And you know, one thing I was curious about, aside from skating, maybe because you kind of already touched on it, but what's something that you kind of notice about all high performers, regardless of, you know, it could be NHL, OHL, whatever, something that really stands out like across the board, like this high performer, they're all the same with this?
I'll tell you what, like there are a couple things that stand out, but I'll tell you the biggest, and this is going to fall out of hockey here, but the biggest difference between elite players that I feel are going to have a chance to play pro. So we've got a couple young kids that are skating on straight now, and there's a couple that, like, he's got a good chance playing in the NHL. If things fall into place for them, he's got a head on his shoulders, and I'm going to go back to parents. And I think this starts at, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years old with how parents parent. So if there's any young parents listening right now, I'm going to go on my soapbox a little bit here. But I just feel that, you know, and you guys deal with it on a daily as well as far as coaches. There are so many coddled kids that are coming up through that have money, that have privilege, that have opportunity. And I don't care how much money you have. That's fine. I think there's still, for instance, you know, a kid that's doing $1,000 skill sessions in 2 weeks. That's $1,000. It's a lot of money, right? I have no issues with that. If that kid appreciates it and is like, hey, thanks, coach. Hey, mom, dad, thanks a lot for bringing me here. I don't care how much money they have. I don't care if they came in a private jet, but if they appreciate it and they're willing to put the work in, that's one thing. But I think as parents, we do a bit of a disservice sometimes where it's just the players just think it's normal to go to a private school that costs 15, 20 grand. And I think that, So to go back to the question, I think some of the biggest things that I notice to separate those elite players is, can they battle through a coach yelling at them? Can they battle through a slump? Are they mentally tough enough to deal with teammates? Are they mentally tough enough to deal with opponents? You know, they have their head on their shoulder. Are they focused? Those are things to me that separate players, whether you have skill or not. Because if you look at the high levels like OHL and above, all those kids can skate. They can all shoot pretty well. They can all pass. Obviously, some are better than others. Don't get me wrong, but they're all close to being there. And, you know, you guys have, I'm sure you have tons of stories I do of players that were undrafted, you know, never got a sniff to play any junior hockey or college hockey and are now playing pro and some even playing in the NHL because they wanted it more. They just worked harder. They had that drive. Maybe they came from nothing. Maybe they're they had a father that held them accountable, or a mother that really, you know, pushed them to do that. And I think that's the biggest piece for me that separates the real elite to the kids that are really skilled, but maybe are not going to be able to make that jump to that next level.
So you think that accountability and maybe giving yourself that discipline is the big difference between those that make it and those that don't? Or is it more just kind of that mental toughness and coming from a background of appreciation?
I think it all goes together. Like, you know, for instance, how many kids now, you know, when we went to the rink, I know for me anyway, like, did you guys ever have wheelie bags? You know, and which, like, no problem.
Big time,
with wheelie
big
bags.
Time.
I don't remember. I might have won.
I didn't personally have it because I was like, oh, I'm not doing a wheelie bag. You're going to go over my dead body before I do a wheelie bag.
Yeah. And now, like, some of the parents are like, well, it's hard on the shoulder. Like, they could have back problems. I'm like, are you kidding me? I've never had a wheelie bag. My back's fine. Hips are good. Like, so I just, like, there's things like that. Like, carry your own bag to the rink. You know, bring your sticks. Put all your equipment on by yourself. You know, like, I've got a 8-year-old and a 6-year-old, and by no means am I saying I'm a perfect parent or anything like that, but you know, by the age of 4 or 5, they were putting on all their own gear. You know, they were not doing their skates up yet, but my son's practicing to do skates up, and it's not that, it's just, this is your time. Like, when he goes to the rink, I don't go in the locker room. You go in the locker room, get dressed, I'll come in, tie your skates, and then I'm out. And you know, and at the end of the practice or the game, I'll meet in the lobby. Like, I don't even go down to the locker room. And I, you know, if I'm coaching, obviously in the locker room, but if I'm not coaching, you listen to the coach after the game, you get undressed, and then you come up to the lobby. And just having that, like, this is your time, buddy. You know, it's not my time. I don't, you know, and you do you, and I want them to experience that, right? And I see it now, you know, fast forward to 18, 19 year olds. I mean, we have a kid who's playing in the NHL right now, real high end kid, you know, unbelievable prospect. Obviously now he's a legit NHLer. But he used to get dropped off at the rink at 7 o'clock in the morning from about 30, 40 minutes away from town. We get dropped off here at 7 a.m. because 3 women from his hometown were coming to London to work. He'd be at the rink from 7 a.m. till about 5 till they left work. So he'd come in early, hang out, work out, skate, shoot pucks, do some goalie sessions to shoot pucks, and then have lunch here, hang out, and then they'd come and get him. How many other kids, you know, do you see doing that? How many kids ride a bike to the rink, right? Like, we have kids at 8 Blazer, can I leave my gear here? Yeah, sure. Why? Well, I don't have a ride, so I'm just going to ride my bike in. 100%. You can leave your gear here. I'll pay you to leave your gear here. The fact you're going to ride a bike in. You know, like, those are the things, like, how bad do you want it? You know, and I ask that question to kids all the time. Like, how bad do you want it? Well, I want it really, really bad. No, like, how bad do you really want it? Like, if you couldn't get a ride and you live 10 minutes away, would you walk here? Would you jog here? Would you bike here? Like, how bad do you want it? And most kids, mom can't pick me up. Grandma can't pick me up. Dad can't pick me up. Hey, Dwayne, I can't come today. Sorry, I don't want to ride. All right. No problem. Like, take the city bus, figure it out. You know, and those are the things that I see with a lot of the kids that I feel that take that jump to that next level. You know, they've got that in them. Like, there's no excuses. They're going to make it happen. They're going to get there. They're going to make it, you know, they're going to do it. They're going to do whatever they have to do to get to that point and to do it. And to me, that's the biggest thing that separates those real elite kids to some of the players that maybe aren't going to get that opportunity to make that next level or that jump.
That's awesome. I actually have some similar stories, some players. It's no longer an excuse of why they can't do anything. It's like an excuse why they're going to win, because I clearly show I want it more than you. And, you know, whatever their motivation is, it's an excuse to win rather than an excuse to not do something or not show up and put that effort in. So that's awesome. I love the compete of those kids too, but, Going back a little bit to you as a parent and having to deal with parents a little bit, maybe some things that parents do to enhance or detract, and sometimes, I mean, you even see parents that want it more than the kids do.
Yeah, let me preface this by saying, like, I'm a crazy parent, right? And I think anybody who has kids, any parent is crazy. Like, and I've said this a bunch of times, but every parent is crazy. It's the ones who hide it the best or the least amount of crazy, because we all love our kids. If my kid gets short shifted, I'm going to get hot. I'm competitive. I want my kid to play. Or if my kid doesn't get an at bat at baseball, I'm kind of rattled, like, why didn't you, you know? And I'll give a quick story about this. So my young guy was playing, and it was just, they played 2-minute shifts roughly. And now they're starting to learn how to change on the fly. And I'm just watching, and he's playing, it's all going good. And then a couple times, you know, the one, let's say two defensemen stayed out for 2 minutes. And then my son went out, happened to be a whistle. It was a 30 second, whatever, 40 second shift. In my mind, I'm like, it's getting short shifted a bit. Now he's 70. At this point, he's like 7 years old. Like, ridiculous, right? So I'm watching this. It happened. Just so happened the way the ref blew the whistle and freezes, whatever. Him and his partner, him and his line, whatever, getting shortchanged. Not a big deal, right? I'm getting hot about it. I can feel myself getting like, hey, what's going on, you know? So I let it go. Get in the truck after the game. Hey, good job. Hey, good game, buddy. And I really try to like emphasize, hey, I really like how you backchecked on that player. I really liked how you played that one-on-one or whatever. Not goals, assists, things like that. I like how you worked hard, whatever. So we get in the car and I'm like, hey, how do you think the game went? He's like, oh, it was good. It was great. I'm like, all good. I'm like, and I asked him, like, not specifically, but I was like, hey, you know when, like, a couple times, like, or no, I think I said some long lines, like, how'd you feel like ice time? I was like, yeah, pretty even. He's like, yeah, it was great. It was good. And I remember driving. I was like, I am such an idiot, man. Like, I am exactly what I tell parents not to be. I was that guy. Now I caught myself. So I'm so happy that I didn't like get in that conversation with them. You know what I mean? Where, hey, did you notice here? Did you notice there? I didn't. I just asked him a question. No, it was great. You know, so dad, what are we doing now? I'm like, I'm an idiot. Like, I'm just in my head. I'm just having this internal dialogue, battling myself, right? So dealing with parents, I think, like, and I'm, you know, before I never had kids and I would give it to parents. Now I have kids, so I have more authority to give it to parents because I'm going through it now myself, right? But I think for any parent, I think it's really important to, you want to be vocal at the right time. So meaning if I've got a 7-year-old or a 6-year-old who's getting slighted or getting yelled at or something, then you got to step in as a parent. There's no doubt about it, right? But I think we got to let our kids do more. So for instance, you know, my son wanted to jump on the ice and help out with the young kids, or my son wanted to do something, go ask the coach. And dad, you're going to come with me? I'll come with you, but you got to ask. I don't want to ask, you ask. I'm like, no, I'm not asking. If you want to do this, you ask. So he went in and nervous, and the head coach just wondering, you know, would I be able to come on with the young kids and help them out? Yeah, no problem. And walk away, buddy. I'm really proud of you. That was good. Because it's not easy, right? We all start trying to talk to the coaches. Like, I want to talk to a coach. But right. Getting them to do that at young ages is huge. Now, that same coach yells at my kid for no reason, or I feel like something, then that's a different conversation we'll have. And hey, what happened? I coach, I get it. Maybe you're mad. Maybe you did something. No problem. But I think that's the right time to step in. But now you guys see it. And I'm sure you guys as coaches, you'll be done a game and you're on your way home. You haven't left the game 50 minutes and you already got an email from a parent just berating you for 30 minutes about how their kid got slighted ice time or how he should have been on this line and whatever, right? So don't do that. You know, don't do that. Because at the end of the day, I've seen it firsthand and you guys have as well, I guarantee it. Players have dropped in the draft because of the parents. Players have not gotten picked on AAA teams or AA teams or whatever it is because of parents. And if I'm coaching a team and I've got my bottom three players that I'm picking from, and one of those players has crazy parents, I'm not picking that kid. So hide your crazy for all those parents out there. Just hide your crazy.
Oh, I got two things on that. So once I did, in high school, did refereeing, mini mite. So house, before they even get started in mite level here, it's
Like,
oh man, I couldn't handle the parents yelling at me then. I'm like, all right, I'm never yelling at a ref ever. Even when I'm playing, I'm done. I'm not doing this. Oh, it's the greatest thing ever. Now I'm so humble towards rest. I'm like, oh yeah, you didn't see it. Okay, whatever. I probably give them too much benefit of the doubt. But same exact story. They're just like, oh crap, I don't want to deal with this shit.
It's funny you say that though. Like I reffed in college and like just a men's league, like making some side money, right? On Sundays, we'd ref, me and some buddies, and I had such a different appreciation for referees after that. I changed how I talked to them, and I think it's important even for parents, like parents that yell at you or me or whoever for running a bad practice, like, here's the whistle. Next practice is all yours. Enjoy. Have fun. Because if you haven't coached before, you have no idea. And, you know, and the kids could have been bad. The kids could have been had a tough day at school and they're off the charts and you're trying to rein them in and deal with it, right? So I think if you haven't been in those shoes, it's hard. It's really, really hard for some parents to hold back.
And I'll give you one thing. So you're talking about giving the whistle to the parent. What I do every year is I have one game I call my coffee game. And I literally, I'm telling the kids, look, I'll fill the water bottles, I'll do the basics, but you run everything. I'm just here with the coffee and see how great you can do it, which is a great way to turn off some high school or college age kids who think they can do better. And then too many men penalties. No one likes their line assignments. You're killing me on the ice time. It's great.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. We started doing where we had kids, they'd have to come up with the first three drills of practice. So three in groups of three, so they each have a drill, but they have to come up with the first three drills of practice. And that was amazing because it just got them to think, like, now you're driving the car, you're not a passenger anymore, right? And you got to think, oh man, you've done thousands of drills by the time you're 14 and you can't think of one drill to do in a warm-up, right? Because you've just gone through the motion. So getting them to think outside the box a little bit and how to set it up, where do the pucks go, when do I blow the whistle, how do I draw it on the board for the boys, right, or the girls. So I think that coffee game is amazing. It's awesome. Put them in the driver's seat for a bit and see how different it is. And hopefully they appreciate what goes into practice and what goes into games for sure.
That's a really cool idea. I'm for sure going to try that this year. That's I love that. All right. Last one for me. And we really appreciate your time here today. I'm curious, and I'll leave this one kind of vague. Where do you see the game going in 5 years, 10 years? Like maybe skills, like where's skills coaching going? Where's the game going? What's going to be better, worse, et cetera?
I'm excited. Like, I love the game now. You look at these defensemen, you think, back 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago, a D was a big D that was on the blue line and dumped pucks in and fired pucks around. But now, I mean, I love the way the game's going. I love the skill of the game. I think it's going to get better and better and better. Even when you see some of the goals that are scored, some of the plays that are made and some of the skills that we're seeing now, I think it's going to continue to evolve and probably get a little bit quicker even than what it is now. The biggest skill that I feel that players are getting better at and really adding to their game. And it's more maybe of a habit, but I quote, kind of say, it's a skill or a habit, it doesn't matter, but it's just how aware they are of where they are on the ice. And, just how aware they are of where their teammates are by just having a quick look. And, you'll see a goal and, man, that was a sick pass from behind the net or from the corner. And then you watch the replay. Well, he shoulder checked twice before he went in there. He had a pretty good idea where that guy was or what area he was in and then made the play, So I think that's another piece of the game that we're going to continue to work on is both the mental part of the game. So being mentally tough and being able to overcome slumps and obstacles and all that stuff. I think that's a big, big piece of the game that's evolving. And I also think just the on-ice skill of being able to be aware of your surroundings. So I think the game's going to get better and better and better. And we're going to see, we're going to see more Makars. We're going to see more Quinn Hugheses. We're going to see more, McDavids. I'm not saying they're going to be maybe as good as them, but some poorer versions of those guys in the near future for sure.
I'm a big Suzuki guy. I love that kid. Montreal Canadiens. Yeah. Listeners that don't know, I think But, oh, man, the things that he sees, like he shoulder checks and he's doing these spinorama passes or behind the back. He reminds me of Patrick Kane a little bit.
You know what? And so I just had him on the ice. He's worked with us and not I don't want to be name dropping or anything like that, but he's been with us since Bantam. Came to an academy we had here. Him and his brother as well, Ryan's drafted by Carolina. Both off the charts hockey IQ. They're unbelievable and great guys, like really, really good guys, humble. Just really, really good dudes. And the skill set on them is unbelievable. And one thing I was going to say too, and back to the question about, where's the game going? A lot of times in skill sessions, I'll put stuff out. So I'm big on, the ice sheet when you're playing a game is never empty. So running a skill session with three players and nothing on the ice makes no sense to me. Now, it also is not full of stationary things. So I understand having a bunch of cones and a bunch of things just standing there is not realistic as well. But if I had both you guys on the ice for a skill session, how boring would it be on just a flat sheet of ice with nothing on it, right? So I like bringing out some tools and some stuff to slip under and then add a player instead. So get rid of the tool and then add a live player. So now you got to make a little bit of a different reaction and then progress to speed and pressure and all that stuff. But these guys, like, so to where the game's going, you put an obstacle out there. Let's say it's just a cone and a stick or whatever it is. And just say, do whatever you want. Just be creative and watch the stuff these guys do. And they think outside the box and it's awesome. So you're like, I never even thought of doing that around a cone and a stick. And, so I learn all the time from players I work with, whether it's young kids or older kids. I'm like, that's sick. I'm going to try to teach that 10-year-old I work with how to do this, and just watching the stuff they do. And I'm constantly asking questions. What's it like here? What's it like on this play? Hey, when you scored that goal, were you looking at that spot or were you, or did you kind of get lucky? And I'm always asking questions like that as well.
Such a key part of it, is asking questions, understand what the player is experiencing. So it's exactly what you're talking about. It's not what we know, but what they understand and perceive and are able to go with. So I got one last question for you here, because I know I want to be respectful of your time, but
yeah, no
maybe what's something you've changed your mind about recently? Or even a little bit further back, just epiphanies that you've had through your career of like, wow, why, I used to think this, yeah. Now I think this is so much better.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, even some of those NSDA videos that I have out, or I look back on some that are kind of 2 years old, and a lot of them are just like really technically based, so it's not going to change much over time. But even some of them, I'm like, oh man, I don't do that anymore. I don't really teach it that way anymore. But I think a lot of a couple of big things are definitely not such an emphasis on a player's skating style or technique, but more emphasis on, can he get to where he needs to go quickly? Does he have the ability and the power and the strength to get to where he needs to go you know, quickly. So for instance, the game is played in such small areas all the time. You know, you're never going to see a player get a breakaway from goal line or top of the circles to the far end usually, right? But you're going to see players cut or go on a lateral or crossover or add a little fake or foot movement. So we tend to teach a lot more of footwork and little cuts and cutbacks and little fakes with your feet. So if a defenseman, if you think in your mind a defenseman go back on a retrieval in the D zone and has a player on them, you see, you know, saw it with Dallas all the time in Tampa, you know, that little like fake with their foot and then cut the other way. But teaching those things and just teaching different things with their footwork. And then the one thing we've been hammering on for the last year, and I think a lot of skill coaches are doing this, is just the head. Knowing where you are before you get pucks, knowing who's around you, finding that open player, finding your defenders and where they are, looking for pressure, how to escape pressure, but just using the head more and just being more aware on the ice. And I think, not to hit a hot topic button, but it also is going to help with concussions, because you're not going to be put in those positions where, you know, you turn and all of a sudden you're going to get hammered. It still happens, obviously, but the more aware you are of your surroundings, though, hopefully the better opportunity you have to escape those big hits and stuff.
I think you're reading our drafts of our newsletter, because that's one of the things that we're yeah. about to touch on is having awareness and how that helps with concussions and things like that. So crazy time. Man.
Yeah, I keep spreading it because I think it's such a big thing. And I think the more we can educate ourselves as coaches and obviously as parents and minor hockey coaches to skill coaches and spread kind of some good, there's a lot of good information out there. You guys have had some awesome guests on. And I think it's important for people and parents to get educated. You know, and you guys have been to rinks a ton. You see a lot of skill sessions and you probably leave the rink scratching your head. Like, what was that? What did I just see? You know, and I think for parents, the more educated they become, the more like, maybe I shouldn't be paying for that. Maybe I should be looking for something a little bit different. And there's a ton of great skill coaches out there, male and female, that do a phenomenal job. So there's definitely someone in your community for sure.
Absolutely wonderful. Well, Dwayne, this was absolutely a fun conversation. I'd probably say this for everyone, but truly one of my favorite episodes by far. At the end, we love to give 2 minutes, talk about anything you want, plug anything you want. Floor is all yours.
Well, no, I appreciate it. First of all, I want to congratulate you guys on, first of all, launching a podcast, because I'm sure you guys were talking about it for a while and then finally pulled the trigger on it, which is not an easy thing at first. I'm sure the first one kind of felt like you were pulling your pants down a little bit as far as just throwing it all out there. But it's awesome, man. So congrats on that. And for myself, yeah, like I do a podcast as well called Behind the Gear, and a variety of guests, kind of like you guys, just talk hockey and kind of journeys and, you know, more for parents and coaches and players that, you know, look at an NHL player, like, how did he get to the NHL? Because if I'm 10 years old, I have no idea how to go from 10 to the NHL, and kind of dissecting that a little bit and talking to, you know, a lot of NHL players. And I've had some parents on, some NHL parents and coaches, GMs, scouts, all that kind of stuff. So it's been a lot of fun. So yeah, congrats on that. And then the NSDA, so it's the National Skill Development Association. And that's something I started a couple years ago. I was doing these videos for my staff a little bit and then down the road to put them out. And I just said, you know what, I'm just going to put them out for free and get them out there. And this is basically kind of me, you know, just saying there's no secret sauce. It's all out there. So I'm not hiding anything. This is how I teach. This is what I teach. And I'm constantly trying to learn. So as much as my videos are going out there and I'm hoping people are enjoying them, I'm taking in other videos and looking at them and seeing what other coaches are doing and trying to learn from what they're doing as well. So yeah, all in all, it's been a lot of fun, and yeah, I've enjoyed every minute of it. So.
Awesome. Well, we have a few of your staff members, I believe, on our newsletter right now. So we'll hopefully get a few of our stuff into what you're doing here soon. So that'd be
sure.
Cool.
No, it's great, man. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, guys. I really appreciate being on.
Yeah. Thank you, Dwayne. We'll take
it. Thank you. Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks, boys.
Thank you for tuning into the Hockey IQ podcast. We are Hockey's Arsenal. Greg Rivak and Dan Dukart. Together, we've come together to create a platform and a community to expand on hockey intelligence, hockey IQ, whatever you want to call it. We're very passionate about seeing this game played smarter and better and continue to develop itself to the next level and staying on the cutting edge of things. So you can find us at Hockey's Arsenal on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. We're also at hockeysarsenal.com. From there, you can find some resources and some options to work with us. We're excited to continue this. If you enjoyed this episode, please like, subscribe, follow, and share. You can also join up for our newsletter as well, where we're going to tackle anything Hockey IQ related. So we're excited to have everyone here and continue to build.
That concludes this week's episode. Thanks for joining us here at Hockey IQ. If you haven't already, take a quick moment to hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, and drop a review. If you want to be a great teammate, even recommend us to a friend. You can follow us at Hockey's Arsenal on Twitter and Instagram. Check out the website, hockeysarsenal.com, where you can subscribe to the weekly newsletter. You won't regret it. Catch you beauts here next week for a brand new episode.